My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Birthday, birthday, coming to Earth Day, pink and wrinkly and small.
You love this song.
Birthday, birthday, it was the first day you were anyone at all. It isn't a day you remember, but a happy one, for you've been told how your mother smiled and held you tight and welcomed you into the world.
Yay! Thank you. No one ever has ever in my life sang me that song, but I think I've been sung that song like 10 times, just exclusively by a member of the All Red family, mostly you, sometimes Alex. Thank
that
you.
Song is an All Red family classic. Happy birthday tomorrow when this drops. Not tomorrow right now, but tomorrow when this drops. Woo!
The big 2-6, baby. Can you believe?
Queen.
Can you believe I celebrated 2 birthdays on this Potterino? I cannot even deal with that. That blows my mind.
That is wild.
I know.
Crazy. Which was the better one?
What was the better one? Last year was really fun. So I'm going to say that. And I always cry on my birthday, and I didn't cry on my birthday last year because you and I spent the whole day together watching spooky movies, and you didn't even give me time to cry. It was awesome. And we did our show.
Yay!
I remember I cried a ton the year before because my dad came to town and came and visited, which was, like, so crazy. I remember I sat by myself for a couple hours, and I was like, no one should sit alone on their birthday. Because my dad was only there for, like, an afternoon. So, like, there was a, you know, when, like, people are like, oh, I'll do something with you in the evening. Oh, I'll do something with you, in the afternoon. And then there's, like, time in between. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to plan this bit. And then you just have to sit with your birthday thoughts. And my birthday thoughts are always sad. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Never sad, but always, like, melancholy.
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad you know what I
this
mean.
This is, that's why I have a complicated relationship with my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not careful, it just makes me a little sad.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Another year older, another year wider, wiser. Happy birthday, girl. Don't worry about the cake.
Because the cake is on us. Your favorite restaurant. Your favorite podcast.
Your favorite podcast.
I hope your birthday doesn't make you a little sad this year.
I hope not.
I hope
we'll
it
see.
Is great.
Wow. Maybe I could share this. I'm going on a booze cruise for my birthday, a Taylor Swift themed booze cruise. So stay tuned to my Instagram to see pictures.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
I know. I'm excited.
When does Midnights come out?
Midnights comes out October 21st, ? Bad Swiftie.
Oh,
make sure.
That's a ways away.
I know.
Never mind.
21st. Good Swiftie.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred. It's not my birthday, but you know what it is? My day to be a Gleek.
Hell yeah.
A mini Gleek. Now that we've started releasing these on Wednesdays, I keep forgetting to say that I'm a mini Gleek. And honestly, yeah. If I don't specify... it's anarchy.
I know. I don't want to see a world where we don't specify whether we're a Gleek or a mini Gleek. I don't know that we ever have, but I do understand.
Somebody's listening to our episode and it's a mini-sode, but we say we're Gleeks and we're not mini Gleeks. They drive off the road.
Oh, no.
It throws them.
Yeah, seriously. Throws them. I totally get that.
Someone's listening to our episode while performing open heart surgery, as many doctors do. We just say Gleek, we don't say mini. The patient's dead. Flat line.
Hey, what's up, everyone? My name is Lena Knatzer, and it's not my birthday today. It's going to be my birthday tomorrow. So don't get it twisted. Ooh. But I am also, you know what I am today? Not a birthday girl, but a mini Gleek.
Peace is restored.
Thank goodness. Drive safe, please.
Please make sure that surgery goes well, baby. Well, I'm coming at you live today from Vancouver, Canada.
Hell yeah.
And let me tell you, my phone sure wishes I wasn't.
It said, get me the fuck out of here.
For real. It said, I'm an American citizen. Get me out of this country. I don't want to be here anymore.
Ew.
It keeps dropping the call constantly.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our best. Obviously, you won't really be able to notice listening, but if our conversation ever gets kind of confusing and like we are not listening to each other, it either means that the call dropped or it means that it's like any other conversation we have where sometimes we just don't listen to each other and we interrupt each other. So it could be either. It could be either. So a fun game for you to play.
Pick which one.
Is the internet connection bad or are they just impolite friends? Something to think about.
Guess. Jeez.
Well, birthday girl, living in a birthday world.
Yeah. Are you ready to get into this mini-sode?
Yeah, let's talk about Tina and the Sky with Diamonds.
Hell yes. Let's kick things off with a message from our friend, Ryan.
Dear LPC and Princess Ian, and happy birthday, Lena.
Ryan put that in there anyway. Ian didn't even have to add that in there. Thank you.
That is genuine. That is genuine, though. Ryan actually did. I need to talk in great detail about the mother gleeking pianos in the get back scene at Niada. I'm a piano major and have been playing piano my whole life, so I always look for accurate shots of people playing piano or anything related to pianos. So I will say, I was very impressed with the close-up shots of the hand on the pianos. Most TV shows don't seem to care if the hands are matching the music, but for the criticism. So, first of all, why are the students volunteering to tune pianos? That is something you really have to train and study for, and why must it all happen in one room? That would only make tuning it much, much worse, since you can't isolate your own sound and are going to be distracted by everyone else's tuning. Also, in this song, all the pianos sound very much in tune. Interesting. They must be quick at their job. But that's not what I'm stuck up on. The way these people are able to so easily move these pianos around like they are absolutely nothing is absurd. It's so obviously clear that there is no action inside any of these pianos and that they are props, so I did more research. There are clear shots of the brand name on the mini grand pianos, Grand Illusion, and that's a piano brand I had never heard of. A Google search later makes it obvious why. Grand Illusions is a company that makes and rents out completely empty prop pianos for situations like this. They are simply shells of a piano, and they don't make sound unless you replace the keyboard with an electric keyboard. Why did Glee not cover up the logo? I mean, maybe Grand Illusion says that they have to show the logo, but that seems so weird. You're literally telling the audience it's fake. Grand Illusion pianos are also often used in concerts when the artist wants to have a grand piano, but it is logistically stupid to use an acoustic instrument for a concert, in which case the fake keyboard is replaced with an electronic keyboard attached to the sound system. But I digress. Obviously, in the world of the show, these are real pianos. And since the two other larger real grand pianos are Baldwins, I'm going to assume the five mini grand pianos are also Baldwins. Not an odd choice for a performing arts school to have Baldwin pianos, but an expensive one to say the least. But I digress. Mini grand pianos weigh about 600 pounds. So with four people pushing each piano, that is 150 pounds each person is pushing. And they make it look like nothing. Sure. Okay, then. Add on the weight of Kurt and Rachel riding it? First of all, suspension from the school should be in order. Second of all, I will not go as far as to guess a woman's weight, but I'd say Rachel's ego is about the weight of a piano. But now, get this. Each Baldwin Mini Grand, Model M, comes in at $9,000. Now, also, there are two full-length pianos, which I'm certain are Baldwin ST-10s. Now, if you thought $9,000 was a lot, each of these pianos is $103,000. There's also an upright piano against the wall, which is $2,500. However, that one wasn't being pushed around. So five mini grands, two full-sized one, and one upright that all could have been damaged, that is $253,500 worth of school property that these students are simply playing with for what? A fun little musical number that will be forgotten about immediately? I can only imagine the shit you would get in for even sitting on a school piano, not to mention walking on them and tossing them around like they are worthless. My God. But the school obviously doesn't care about damage to the pianos since they are having the students tune them by themselves. Like I said, suspension, expulsion, a slap on the wrist, anything. Jail. But I digress. The number is fun, I guess. Not a big Beatles fan. Hashtag sue me. Hashtag but sue Rachel and Kurt first. Was this too long? Am I going too much in depth? Consensual forehead kisses, Ryan, he, him, from Canada.
International listener!
Ryan, small world, I'm also from Canada today.
Oh my God.
Hi, everyone.
You know who's not from Canada? Your phone.
My phone is not from Canada, and my phone is, frankly, being a little bit of a nationalist today. It's not a good look.
Oof.
It's,
yeah, it's
one of those people.
It's not a good look, your phone.
I do know people exactly like this. It's one of those people who go to a foreign country to visit and the whole time just keeps going, well, in America, it's like this. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, back home in America, we do things this way. And it's like, cool, well, you're not there. Phone. We're not in America, so chill.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
We are in North America, but we're not in the United States, so chill out.
Ryan, to answer both your questions that you ended with, one, it's not too long. Two, you did not go too much in depth. This is the exact amount of in depth I wanted you to go into. Thank you so much.
Genuinely, one of my favorite things is someone with a very specific area of expertise just waxing on about a minor detail in this show and how it shows how much the production team doesn't know that area of expertise at all. I always think it's funny every time.
I know, me too. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world when people do that. And I love that you sent this message in, Ryan. I have a thought about the Grand Illusion, like the Grand Illusion pianos. Frankly, I'm kind of excited by it. Like, I didn't notice that. And it's kind of like a little Easter egg. So it's like, if you're watching, you know, like, oh, these aren't even real. Like, it's like those like chips that are in like all of the like a bunch of TV shows, and it's like, I know it's not a real brand, but because I like recognize this like fake brand, I know. Yeah. Like, it's kind of fun. It's a little Easter egg.
It's like Acme in Looney Tunes.
I don't even know what that means.
Acme is like Wile E. Coyote. All of his inventions are from Acme.
Oh.
It was a big thing in cartoons. It wasn't just Warner Brothers. A bunch of cartoons back in the day, if they ever needed to have a company, would just name the company Acme. And it was shorthand for like, this is a made up company in a cartoon.
All right. I dig that.
So shoot. Grand Illusions, baby. I'm always flabbergasted by how much piano has cost.
Mm-hmm.
$103 for one of these things. That
$103.
Is
in... I wish it was $103. $103. Jeez, I'd buy two.
Seriously, I guess I can swing it $103.
Seriously.
I might get one for myself.
Send it through the window. Let's bring it in.
That is bonkers. Mm. Oh my gosh.
Seriously.
I do, however, think, Ryan, that Niata probably buys into the toxic actor mentality of everyone needing to have a Broadway body.
Oh, I'm sure.
All these kids are hitting the gym every day for hours on end, and they can push 150 pounds, no problem. They're all doing like Marvel superhero training every single day.
Oh, totally. Totally.
So there's that mentality that's like, if you don't have washboard abs, you're not going to get cast in a Broadway show.
What the hell, Niata? I hate going to school here.
I hate it here.
I can't wait to graduate. I love this message so much. It makes me so happy. I love hearing about all these numbers. And also, like, what the hell? But also, they should be going to jail. Like, in the world of this, they should be going to jail. I can't believe they're standing on these pianos. Oh, my God.
We had... I don't remember the brand because I don't know pianos very well.
We had Steinways in college.
Enough. Oh my gosh, it was a Steinway.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
You're
we
welcome.
Had a Steinway at my high school in my choir room that was donated. It was a Steinway Grand. Mm. And my teacher literally would scream at you. If she like walked in and some kid was just playing with it, she would kill you.
Good.
Drama.
The second hand of my baby.
Be grand. Still has something beautiful to give.
All right.
I still have something beautiful to give.
To give. So good. Oh my God. Bombshell. Come back. Ryan, thank you so much for this message. Up next, we have a message from Fernando.
Hi, Ian and Lena. It's me, Fernando, he, him, from Monterrey, Mexico.
International listener!
Fernando, small world, I'm also from Mexico. At the end of next week, not right now, but the end of next week, I'm from Mexico.
You'll be from there.
That's how it works. If you're in a place, you're from there.
You're from there. When you're here, you're from here.
Olive Garden. When you're here, you're from here.
You're from here.
The waiter comes to the table and he's like, hey, welcome to Olive Garden. Where's everybody from? And someone's like, oh, I'm from Texas. No, you're not. You're from here. Let's take that again. Welcome to Olive Garden. Where's everybody from?
And then
from?
They throw breadsticks at you.
Yeah, they do. You get unlimited breadsticks, but it's because they throw them at you for not answering, I'm from Olive Garden.
Seriously, it's like a whole thing. I can't go back there.
When you're here, you're from here.
That is so funny.
Okay, Fernando, we're going to get back to you. Sorry about that. Okay. I've wanted to write to y'all for a long time, but I don't have a lot of interesting opinions about things. But I was in the ensemble of a high school production of Carrie the Musical, so this is my time to shine. My high school had a decent budget, but definitely not enough. A lot of corners were cut. Like, wow, Carrie, it's so impressive that you use your telekinetic powers to close that window that is off stage. So the effects... So the effects were definitely subtle. When my dad came to see it, you know, he isn't the best at paying attention to dialogue. So by the time the prom scene started, he hadn't quite realized that Carrie was supposed to have telekinesis. His anguish and confusion was very hilarious to see. Top-notch entertainment. But that wasn't the biggest offender of it all. So when the prom scene starts, you expect there to already be a bucket of blood. In our case, strawberry chocolate syrup, floating above everybody.
Ugh.
But in ours, there wasn't. You see, when Carrie gets carried, right after she has to belt the super awesome 11 o'clock number. And you know, it's kind of hard to do that when a thick, gooey liquid is being dropped onto your head. And there is a high likelihood of it getting into your microphone. So when that moment happens, we see in the corner Chris and Billy, each with their own bucket of strawberry chocolate syrup, and they just run to her and drop it on her chest. WTF? That is the lamest prank ever. That is so embarrassing. Not for Carrie, but for Chris and Billy. Bottom-notch entertainment. Another funny thing that happened is that a girl was absent the day we blocked the destruction scene. So the next day, the director told her that she was just going to fall on the floor and die because she was so surprised.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Anyways, wishing the happiest birthdays to Lena. Anyways, wishing the happiest of birthdays to Lena. You are so awesome, talented, funny, incredible, amazing, and smart. Ian, you too. Deuces, Fernando. Fernando, aww, thank you.
Thank you.
Back to your last point. So, in my mind, it's not that, like, you know, Carrie, like, struck this girl and she died. It's like the girl's heart of its own volition stopped beating.
Oh, she was like, so scary.
She was like, oh, this weird religious girl has superpowers? I'm out. Honestly, I'm out. Giving up the ghost. Goodbye.
Giving up the ghost. That is the freaking funniest thing I've ever heard. And also the perfect way. Like, if someone misses blocking, what do you do?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, Carrie has telekinesis. She literally could just point at the girl and the girl could die. And it's like, okay. But the idea that the girl got so surprised that she in and of herself died is hilarious to me.
I'm obsessed.
Oh my gosh.
I love this message. I also totally, like, the microphone. How do you throw a bucket of blood on the microphone? I've never understood it. It's never made sense to me. Oh my God. You know,
if you figure it out, go and tell the production team of the original Broadway production of Carrie the Musical, because that was many problems that kept running into them. Fernando, I'm so glad you sent this email, because I find Carrie the Musical very fascinating. And talking about Tina being carried last week made me start researching it again and relearning stuff and learning new stuff and listening to the cast recording and all that stuff. So there's a wonderful podcast out there called Out for Blood, which is about the history of Carrie the Musical. I highly recommend it. It is so fascinating. But in the reworked version of Carrie the Musical, which is the version that they license out to high schools, which is the version that has, like, the world according to Chris, it's better to strike than get struck. That's the 2012 reworked version. The writers redid the script. They changed some of the songs. They made it all streamlined and made it work better. They altered songs that were already in the show. That version is script-wise stronger than the Broadway version. And in that production, they literally, for the bucket of blood...
Okay, I have a guess on how it works.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Is it a body double? Is it two people? So Carrie and, like, the destruction Carrie are two different Carries?
So that's a genius idea. That's not what they did in the reworked version. In the reworked version, they literally shine a red light on her.
No way. That's it. That sucks.
They do, like, you see the shadow of the bucket tip over, and then there's a splash sound effect, and her spotlight just turns red. And it's fine. Honestly, I understand. Yeah. Like Fernando says, she has to sing a big song after it, so I get why they went with it.
I'm sure it's hard. Yeah, and that's why, like, no one does that show.
Yeah, it's so hard to work around. In the original production, they carried her. They would have, you know, red liquid pour on her. And like Fernando said, it kept getting in her microphone. And then she sings, like, the number of the show, and her mic is not working. And so you just, like, can't hear her for the big climactic moment that everyone's waiting for. So that is kind of the problem with Carrie the Musical, is the whole carrying of it all. How do you pull that off on stage?
And I even, like, said last week, I think to carry someone, it has to be, like, the perfect condition. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never carried someone, but if I or I've never gotten carried either. But I feel like you have to stand in the right spot. The bucket has to go from the right spot. Like, everything has to be, like, perfectly timed as well. And, like, trying to do that with, like, music and microphones and just, like, live theater in general. Like, everything goes wrong all the time. I couldn't imagine, like, trying to make that work night after night. I'm sure some people have. I've seen clips of, like, theaters who have done it. And it would also have to be, like, a studio theater where it's, like, kind of small so she doesn't have to wear a microphone, you know?
Yeah, that's the kicker. Just take the microphone off. Do it in a space small enough where they don't have to be mic'd, and now it's fixed.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I've heard that song. I don't know Carrie the Musical very well, but, like, I've heard that song. That song is loud. I'm sure if you're in, like, a studio theater, you don't need microphones anyway, at least with that song. Like, it's going to be fine.
Here's some fun history lessons about Carrie the Musical, though, that I'm just dying to share.
Yeah, I want to hear them.
This show is so fascinating to me, and I hadn't really thought about it in years, so I had forgotten a lot of stuff about the story of how this show came to be. It's so interesting. So, what I said last week about the Grease misunderstanding is a real thing that happened, but the facts were a little incorrect. As often happens in this podcast, we have an idea that's true, and then we make up the specifics.
Literally, I have, like, I've been shouting this from the rooftop since we began. We are not experts on anything. I don't know why anyone takes what we say seriously. Just kidding.
So, Carrie the Musical was being written. It was being workshopped. They're trying to find a place to develop it. And they decided to do it at the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon in England, because Les Miserables had just been developed there. It was a huge hit. And so it was produced by the Royal Shakespeare Company. The head of the Royal Shakespeare Company was in charge of it. He was assigned as the director, and he was not a musical theater guy. He was a Shakespeare guy. So it was kind of a weird match. One of the producers, I don't remember who they were. They were like a donor to the Royal Shakespeare Company, or they were just one of his friends who was helping him finance the show. They were the ones that he was like, you know, it's kind of out of my comfort zone. I'm not really sure what to do. And they were like, well, there's so many great American musicals about high school. You should look at those. Make it like Grease. And then he, the director, was like, oh, ancient Greece. And then he got this whole idea about, oh, it's a Greek tragedy. And so all the sets are going to look like temples and the costumes are going to look like togas. And which is a take that I think can work with Carrie.
Yeah, it's very Greek. It's so Medea, like, you know, like Greek tragedy, like huge, you know.
But the problem is, the choreographer that they hired was Debbie Allen, who is famous for choreographing Fame, both the movie and the TV show, which were huge 1980s about kids. It's victorious in the 80s. A bunch of kids in a performing arts school having a great time.
For those of you who don't know.
And Debbie Allen's approach to the show was, I want this to feel like modern day kids in the 80s. I want these dance numbers to feel like MTV. And so she's doing a show that feels like it's on MTV. The director's doing a show that feels like it's taking place in ancient Greece. And he kept working on all of the White family stuff. So he would work a lot on Carrie and her mom and their interactions. And he kind of left Debbie to direct all of the group scenes. Like, yes, she choreographed the numbers, but he would be like, direct their stuff. So then you had this weird show where all the stuff with Carrie and her mom feels like a Greek tragedy, and then all the stuff at school feels like you're watching an MTV show, and they're supposed to take place in the same world, and also the kids who are acting like they're on MTV are wearing togas for some reason, and it just was two different shows masquerading as one singular show, and it did not work at all. However, there's a bootleg of the original production on YouTube. And Debbie Allen's approach and whatever the heck the director's name's approach may not have meshed well together. And some of her choreographic choices don't make any sense with the story they're telling. But the dancing is so fun. Oh my gosh.
I've seen clips. It's super, I think you've showed me clips.
In the original version, the opening number in is all of the girls in gym class exercising while they sing it. First of all, I don't know how they're hitting those notes when they're doing the moves that they're doing. Second of all, the moves that they're doing are crazy. They're so wild. I'm so impressed. Also, my favorite thing about the story of that show is the Grease mishap. Maybe my second favorite thing, which I did not know this before I listened to this podcast, is so. Betty Buckley played Carrie's mom on Broadway for all one weekend that the show was open on Broadway.
Right.
She was the mom. However, she did not play the mom in England. Barbara Cook played the mom. Barbara Cook was very famous. She was in Candide. She was the main woman in Candide. She was Marion in The Music Man. I think she won a Tony for that. Mm. She was Broadway royalty. She was a big deal. She had not been in a Broadway show in like nearly two decades. So it was a huge deal that Barbara Cook was essentially coming out of retirement to be in this show. They really had to talk her into doing it. She was supposed to do the England run, and then she was going to come to Broadway with it. Tony Award winner Lilias White was her understudy. And Lilias White tells a story because it was very clear as the production was going on in England that it had a lot of problems. Lilias White tells a story where she was sitting in rehearsal and Barbara Cook was sitting across the room. Barbara Cook said, "Can you believe I'm making my Broadway return in this piece of shit?" Because there were just like so many story problems and so many just like massive script changes that need to happen that were not happening.
Yeah.
Barbara Cook also bought a sledgehammer and gave it to the director as a present. And he said, "What is this for?" And she said, "For the script." So she quit, and that's why Betty Buckley took over when it came to Broadway.
Hell yeah.
Dang, Barbara.
I love that. Barbara.
That's your little Carrie the Musical history lesson. Everyone go listen to that podcast. It's very good. It's very interesting.
That's so
goodness
fun.
Goodness sakes.
Do you want to be in Carrie the Musical? Is there a role you want to play?
Honestly, this is such a hot take. I would want to play Billy, which is like, why?
Yeah.
I just think The World According to Chris is a very fun song. Once again, not in the original version.
The World According to Chris.
Exactly. The World According to Chris. And I think Tommy Ross is such a boring character. There's not many men in that show. It's kind of just Tommy and Billy. And Tommy is so bland. So of the two, I'd rather be Billy.
What Tommy about you? And Billy?
Yeah.
Billy and Tommy?
Yeah. Wanda and Vision's kids
like
are
Wanda's
in that show.
Kids. Yeah. Yeah. So funny. I don't really know. I don't know the show very well, but I mean, my first thought is Carrie, but who knows?
I think it'd be great as Carrie.
Thanks. But also, The World According to Chris. I don't know. Fernando, thanks so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about Carrie. And also, thank you so much for telling us about how one time your director, someone wasn't at a blocking rehearsal, so then they just had to get so surprised they died. Literally, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life. That's my favorite fact about anything that's ever happened in my whole life. Thanks so much, Fernando. Have a good day. Up next, we have a message from Emily.
Hi, hi, hi. So I've got a few thoughts on this episode. It's 2 a.m., though, so hopefully this email makes sense. So, Nurse Penny, I believe, was intended as a Finn love interest. From what I've gathered online, Phoebe Strohl had already been cast, so they adapted the character to have a plotline with Sam instead. The original plan was to have Finn come back to the club and to phase out Will, and I think Penny makes a lot of sense for a Finn love interest. It's so sad to think about what might have been had Corey not passed, but I think the idea of Finn having a mid-game relationship would have been a great direction for his season 4 character. And also, unlike Sam, he is not still in high school. I also agree with how much you love the Tina stuff. I do too, in theory. Her season 4 plot was so great. Seeing Tina, the girl who is constantly getting overlooked and supporting others, become mean and trying to be like Rachel to demand what she's due. And now we're getting into season 5 Tina, who gets showered with a lot of affection, especially from Blaine. And it's nice. Tina's one of the two Glee characters I feel the strongest connections to. And the other is, ironically, Kurt, which brings me to my main gripe. This feels sort of like a rehashing of Prom Queen, and I hate it. Because of the 3 times Glee has pulled these prom plots, only one character had a non-traumatic fairy tale experience, Rachel Berry. What is the show saying about its top Doc Martens wearers? I'm sorry, Emily fully wrote Dr. Martens. What is the show saying about its top Dr. Martens wearers, the actual outcasts, Kurt and Tina? Constantly being the only people that get bullied on this show while Rachel gets such special treatment? Also, for some reason, thinking about the love for Tina in this episode made me double down on hit TV show Glee Season 2, Episode 20, Prom Queen Sadness. All Kurt had was Blaine, and he said in Promosaurus how traumatic it was. It's powerful to see Tina be so supported and to make this truly her moment, but I bet it was a rough night for Blaine having to go through such a similar situation 2 years on. And oh my god, Blaine. I love that he basically says the same things, almost word for word, that he said to Kurt in Prom Queen. Tina's like his platonic Kurt substitute while he's in New York, and it's adorable how much he cares for her. Basically, this episode is cute, but it reminds me of my big problem with the trend of Glee prom episodes, and I can't say I love that. It was such a pleasure listening to your thoughts on it, though. You guys are such a highlight of my week, and I'm really enjoying season 5 so far. So much love. Have an awesome week. Emily, she, her, from England.
International listener!
Emily, small world. I was from England for like 2 weeks in 2011.
Oh, I've never been from England before.
That's crazy.
Emily, thank you so much for this message. A bunch of people sent us messages. I had no idea about this, that Penny maybe was supposed to be for Finn, which makes way more sense. Blows my mind.
I'm so happy to know that.
Yeah, seriously. It like somehow fixes everything for me. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, got it.
I feel the same way because I think it was a bad choice to put Sam with Penny because she is fully like a faculty member, but it does make me kind of give the writers a pass because I'm completely. Oh, they fully wrote these scripts and cast this girl. She knew she was going to be playing this part. They can't just like, well, they could just fire her, but that would be such a mean thing to do. And they already had the scripts written with Finn having these scenes with her. And then suddenly, one, Finn's not going to be in the episode, and two, and much bigger, a huge tragedy has happened. I'm sure they're not looking into the minutiae of like, how, I'm sure it was very last minute scrambling and we have bigger fish to fry and we're all grieving.
Yeah.
So while it was a wild choice, it does make me forgive them for it.
Yeah. Me too. I agree.
It also does majorly highlight that I feel like in the rest of the show, Sam super duper becomes the Finn replacement. Like I think a lot of Sam's stuff moving forward is just, well, this is what we were intending to do with Finn, so I guess you're the next closest thing and here's what we're gonna do with you now.
On to the rest of your message. I totally agree. This totally is like Glee's like prom whole deal. They love a fake prom queen. They love a stuffed ballot box, and they love like, you know, a tragic prom story, which like honestly I understand the trope of a tragic prom, like prom when you're in high school, at least like from the media, and at least in my mind, like prom was like the night of nights, the night of nights, you know, you're gonna do it right
tonight.
You know what I mean? Like it's totally.
Let's
like it's
dance.
A huge deal. Let's dance. Like it's a huge deal, and I just so, like, those things going wrong are, like, you know, it's a big fear. And, like, you know, I don't know. It just, like, hits, I feel like, close to home for prom goers. So I understand why they do it. And it's also, like, this is a story about underdogs. I understand why they do it. But it's, like, also, like, we've heard this story a million times.
Yeah.
I totally get what you're saying.
And also, like Emily says, why is it that prom is always sad and hard for everyone except Rachel Berry, who gets an amazing prom night where she's with her boyfriend and he tells her how beautiful she is and she wins prom queen, and her high school experience ends on such a high note. Because Rachel can face some adversity, but as long as everything ends up going her way and she is praised after all of it, whereas Kurt and Tina can go through trauma and then have to learn to keep on going afterwards.
Yeah.
Also, no one at the school has legitimately won prom queen for 3 straight proms.
I know. What the hell?
They really need a higher security system on their ballot box.
I know. Honestly, I always voted on the line with voting for prom.
Really?
We always did it online.
Mm-hmm. How high tech was your high school?
I don't know. We did it on our school accounts. Like we voted for like president. We voted for like all of our student council. We voted for prom like on our like. That's smart. I was gonna call it our DSDs. It was our Davis School District account. It's like, you'll know what a DSD is.
I do, of course. I love a good DSD.
Yeah, of course. Like, log on to your DSD.
We had to go to the quad, and Stugo, the student government, just had a tent set up, and you would walk, and they'd give you...
Stugo? I've never heard that.
Really? I thought that was everywhere. Shoot, well, we called it Stugo. The student government had a tent set up. They'd give you a slip. They would cross your name off so that they would make sure that you couldn't vote twice, like, off of the attendance roll. And then you would just check 2 boxes, hand it back to them. So they easily could have cheated if they wanted to, frankly.
Totally.
Maybe they did.
Maybe.
I'll never know.
Friggin' Stugo.
Stugo.
Jeez Louise, I've never heard that in my life. That makes sense. We just called it government.
We just called
the
it...
government kids.
We just called it the United States government, is what we called it.
Yeah, I was really freaked out. I didn't understand.
You're like, why is the entire country so invested in my high school? This makes me uncomfortable. Like,
seriously. Emily, thank you so much for this message.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Up next, we have a message from Kathara.
Hi Ian and LPC. It feels like this is the first episode, if not ever, then at least in a while, that the Glee writers have had the balls to even use the word bisexual, but then they literally immediately undercut it with terminology like real sapphic queen and real lesbian. And let me tell you, as a queer girly under the bi umbrella, that shit hurts. I have no quote-unquote real experience in a WLW relationship, and anytime I'm in a WLW conversation, I feel pressured to hide my bi-ness. I use gender-neutral terminology when describing my dating history because I'm afraid of mentioning men and being labeled as not queer enough, especially since all my real history is with men. Media like Glee is exactly why I do this. Media like Glee is why I question my queerness sometimes. Like I have to choose one gender to be attracted to. I don't even use the label bisexual because I literally don't feel bi enough. It's ridiculous and mean. There's my 2 queer cents, XOXO, Kathara.
Kathara, I think you're totally not alone in feeling this way. I think a lot of people under the queer umbrella, like, question their attraction to one or more genders constantly. And constantly feel like they have to say this if they're this, or feel this if they're that. When it's like, I hope that in time you either find a label that speaks to you, or like you realize that like truly if you feel queer, if you have attraction to multiple genders, you're queer. Like that it doesn't matter what your like history is. And I hate that Glee has like spread this narrative that like to be a real queer, it's like quote, I don't know, what am I saying? Especially with bisexuals, bisexual people, that like, you know, there's always that, there's just like, you know, so many stereotypes when it comes to like bisexual people, like they're going to run away to the other gender, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I hate that Glee does that. And I hope that this sucks. And I hate that like Glee has to make people feel like this. And I don't like that. I don't know.
That's the double-edged sword of labels, baby. Labels are great
completely.
Because they make people feel seen. They make people feel understood. Mm-hmm. It can help you learn more about yourself. It can help you find a community. Labels can also be bad when people mm-hmm. are like, oh, now you have to conform to all of these unnecessary rules that we have placed under this label. And that's why you accept the labels that are helpful to you. And then the parts that aren't helpful, totally. You discard them. An interesting thing about Glee's biphobia is friend of the podcast Cookie sent us an email where they told us that Ryan Murphy, what's the name of the podcast he guested on? Do they say?
I'll tell you. Just Be with Bethany Frankel.
So Ryan Murphy was on that podcast, Just Be with Bethany Frankel, and mentioned that when he was young and impressionable, he had a boyfriend who left him, broke his heart, and then immediately started dating a woman. His boyfriend was bisexual. And I wonder if that's kind of where the biphobia comes from. Now, hear me out. Doesn't mean that it's justified. It doesn't mean that his boyfriend was in the wrong at all. Like, he has every right to date who he's attracted to. But it reminds me of, you know, when you're listening to, like, a true crime story and you hear about the criminal's past and what shaped them as a person, and it's like, I'm not on your side. You're still in the wrong. But it's interesting to see your perspective, and now I know where you were coming from. I wonder if that experience, like having one of his early loves leave him, quote unquote, at least in his mind, for a woman, just made him, whether he realized it or not, have a ton of prejudice against bisexual people for years afterwards.
I'm sure that hurts.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that hurts, you know, and I'm not here to like say that doesn't, but it's also like that's an entire group of people who you are hurting with your prejudice.
Well, it's like it's that mentality of how many times do you hear someone be like, well, you know, I dated this guy and he was into this thing. And so I've learned to never trust guys who are into that thing.
Oh, or like, totally. Yeah.
You know, I've dated tall girls before and I'll never date a tall girl again. That it's.
No, totally. Like, tall girls are bitches.
That was fully not directed at you. It didn't even occur to me that you were a tall girl. I'm so sorry. But
God,
I think it is human nature to be like, this person broke my heart. And so now I'm not going to trust anyone that reminds me of that person. Yeah. And I think that no matter what, that's unhealthy because no two people are the same. But especially when it's causing you to like marginalize a whole group of people, it's double unhealthy.
And like say some unkind things, certainly. Yeah. Anyway, I know that a lot of people feel this way, and I totally get that. I think I have felt this way in the past as well. Like where like growing up, like knowing like that something like I'm attracted to like multiple genders and not knowing like how to put a label on that. Feeling confusion with the labels, feeling confusion with myself, feeling confusion with like, oh, like, especially like growing up, you guys know, I mean, I only dated like one person throughout my like almost entire adolescence. And that was a man. Like, so I was like, am I actually like, I don't have any experience. And then it's like, nope, I was as queer then as I am queer now. And that's just the truth. Anyway, but thank you for sharing this. My heart truly goes out to you. I totally know what this feels like. And, you know, I totally get that. So thank you for sharing. And thank you for being so open with us. I appreciate that. Heck yeah. Thank you, Kathara. Up next, we have a message from Story.
Hello, LPC and Ian. I would just like to pitch to you an alternative way the Santana Danny of it all could have gone in this episode. Picture this. A rustic hunting lodge. My latest kill, roasting over the fire.
Stop.
My little wife massaging my feet. Why the kids play on the floor with the dogs? Why we'll have six or seven. Dogs?
No, Belle. Strapping boys like me.
Story, why did you write the inner monologue of me from the stage version of Beauty and the Beast in this email? Very weird of you. We're going to go on to the next sentence. That was a bizarre choice.
So crazy.
Picture this. Santana starts her explanation of never being with a, quote, real lesbian before. But instead of just being totally glossed over, it's treated as a classic Santana lashing out inappropriately to hide her insecurities moment. Then we can segue one of two ways, or my personal fave, a combo of two ways. First, Santana reveals that she hasn't been with anyone she was serious about since Britney, and she's scared because of that. All of her relationships since Britney have been clear, no-strings-attached flings. The Britannia breakup was obviously rough for Santana, and we all know that Santana does not like to be vulnerable. Since Britney, Santana hasn't had to worry about actually developing feelings for anyone, but she does have feelings for Danny, and that's scary for her. Second, Santana not only has never dated a lesbian, I don't know that Santana has ever met another lesbian. We saw Santana have some moments early on in her self-discovery where she would say things like, I'm not blank, so I can't be a lesbian. And this could be an interesting full circle of, what if she thinks I'm not being a lesbian right? Of course, the problem here is that these options would require sensitive and thoughtful writers who care about the way queerness as a whole is portrayed on their show, particularly bisexuality and queer non-men. Side note, notice how I said met another out lesbian? Because we all know Quinn Fabre is a closeted lesbian.
And that's the truth.
Also, speaking of insensitive and unthoughtful portrayals of their queer characters, I just hate the GBFication of Kurt in later seasons of Glee. Rachel's sad, so let's roll Kurt out to hype her up until she gets back, because Lord knows we can't allow Rachel to have any character development. And while we're at it, we'll disregard Kurt's own character development as well, because we can't allow him to do anything that might make him less accessible to Rachel in crisis. Now, I'll end this email before it gets too long, but first I have to say, how dare Alex come onto this show and give us the fire take of Rachel Berry is a swing for Funny Girl. Do you know how desperately I want to watch that plotline now? I can't stop thinking about it. Forever recovering Gleek, story, she, her.
Hell yeah.
Story, this take is fantastic. I especially love... I think I agree with you that a combo of the two options you presented would be the best. But I especially love your second option that you say, which is Santana. It's such a big deal to her that Danny is a full lesbian because Santana had her own prejudices about what being lesbian meant. And now she's afraid that Danny is going to view her through that lens and maybe she isn't queer enough and all of that stuff. That would be so interesting. Imagine a show where so instead of the show preaching that characters aren't queer enough, the show itself preaching that, it's the characters who are afraid of that, and the show teaches that there is no such thing as being queer enough. Just who you are is the right amount of queer or not queer.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. It's also like, I don't know. I love both these takes so much too, because like, it would be such a beautiful story to show Santana meeting another out lesbian, like, because that's like such an amazing moment, like being from a small town and then realizing like where queer people are and like meeting like people who are out, like as you're an adult and you're like, oh my God, I thought this was a secret we had to keep close to our chest. And then like, I just think that's such a beautiful thing. And especially like, the lesbian representation on the show, like, I just think that's so important and awesome, and it could have been so cool, you know? I hate that. I hate that Ryan Murphy was such a butthead.
I'll say, like, even in my own life, since coming out, I will talk to certain people and get self-conscious about, like, I feel like I don't know enough about certain queer media, and so I will purposely, like, avoid the topic because I'm embarrassed that if they hear that, you know, I don't know this artist's body of work very well, or like, I've never seen this show, or I've never seen this movie, they're gonna be like, oh, really? Like, you think you're queer? Sure. So I think that would be a very interesting storyline to have on this TV show. Alas, we don't have it.
Yeah, unfortunately. Let's rewrite Glee. The story, also, to talk about the GBFification of Kurt, too. Like, we're seeing it now, and I think, we'll see how it keeps going, but it's just, like, especially with the Vogue thing, the Vogue.com, mm-hmm. we're like, that was Kurt's, like, thing. The thing that was just for Kurt, not for any other character on this show, that just for Kurt. And he doesn't have that anymore. Like, he has that, but he doesn't have that anymore. And it's like, Kurt is allowed to be his own character. You know, obviously, we have him in his relationship with Blaine, other than Rachel. But, like, other than that, Kurt is allowed to be his own person and, like, move to New York and explore what he wants to do on his own. Like, I don't know. I was so excited. We talked about this so in depth. But we were both so excited when he got that job mm-hmm. at Vogue. And then we're so pissed when he started going to NYADA. Like, because, like, they just want him to be closer to Rachel because they want him to be in more Rachel-centered storylines rather than having more Kurt-centered storylines. And I hate that.
Yeah. I agree.
Thanks. Thank you, Story, for your message.
I have a birthday present for you. Yes.
Oh, my God. I just want to say, like, God bless you for waking up as early as you do these podcasts. This morning, I was, like, dragging ass. Last couple weeks, I've been, like, so tired. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's, like, 8 and 9 o'clock for me. It's, like, 9 o'clock. It's, like, how? It's, like, 11 o'clock for me right now. What time is it for you? Like, ass crack
it's
of dawn.
It's 8. No, when we started, I woke up at 5:40.
Why?
And we started at 6. And then the connection has been so bad that it's now 8. We're still doing
this mini-sode.
We made it work.
We made it work. But honestly, I just think you're a rock star for doing that. You're a rock star for waking up this early. We're making it work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, as a birthday surprise, I've been working for a really long time on this.
Oh, my God.
I thought of doing kind of a fun birthday game.
Oh, my God. I love a game.
Okay. I think you'll love it. Mm-hmm. Frankly, maybe. don't get too excited because I think that I'm going to do much better than you and I'm going to win it a bunch and you're going to win it only sometimes.
Okay, got it.
It's called the relative pitch game.
Huh, tell me all about it.
So I thought that we could take songs from this last episode of Glee and we could sing them, just, you know, sing them cold and then see if we sing them in the key that they're performed on the show.
I dig it. Okay. I would love to play. Awesome. Should I go first or should you go first?
Who did the Glax this week? It was you, so you're going first.
Yeah, I'll go first.
All right. All Beatles songs, obviously. We got Get Back, Something, Here Comes the Sun, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Hey Jude, Let It Be. You're singing Something.
How does Sam sing this? Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave her now. I know I believe in how.
For something in the way she moves. That's all C sharps down to a C natural at the end.
Nice.
Or D flats to a C if you want to be fancy.
I don't.
Oh, then never mind. C sharp to C. You're sharp.
Boink. I knew it.
Sorry, birthday girl.
Damn it. That's okay. Can't win them all.
So,
okay, I would like you to sing Hey Jude. Sorry. I don't know. I'm probably not right, but I'm certainly going to change. Like, I'm chipping with your head.
Okay. Oh, no.
Should I pick a new one?
No, I can do Hey Jude. This is probably what you sang, but we're going to pretend that I'm pulling it out of my butt. Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let it into your heart. Then you can start. We're skipping to the end. To make it better, 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 better. Wow! Bah, 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 nah, nah. Okay. Hey. C sharp again, baby. Oh, hey, Jude is a C sharp to an A sharp.
Oh.
I don't know if that's what you sang. It might be.
I don't know. Even maybe I'm just trying to mess with your mind.
It is not what she sang. It's not even what I sang. I sang a C natural to an A natural. I don't know how I got them mixed up. Also, apologies for the sound quality. I am literally editing this at a cafe in Vancouver.
Good news. We both started on C sharp, and both of our songs started on a C natural.
Wait, that's hilarious. Best birthday gift you could have given me is that the funny
exact, exactly the exact same wrong.
I don't think that's ever happened ever.
No, that's so bizarre. In the
history of music, that's so bizarre.
Well, sorry, Lena, it still hasn't happened. I was actually right. Happy birthday. Sorry.
Happy birthday to us.
Happy birthday to us.
I'm co-opting your birthday.
Honestly, fine. You can have it. How old does that make you now?
Oh, 28. I give it back. I'm not ready to be 28. People keep, oh my gosh, my coworker the other day said, how old are you, 23? And I said, yeah. And someone else, we got a new assistant cruise director, and he came on, and we were talking, and he was like, you're 24, right? And I said, I can be 24.
I like the way you say that, like a little vixen. That's really funny.
For you, I could be.
Yeah, I could be 24.
Here's the deal. 26 and 27 is still so young.
So
you know what's even younger? Early 20s.
How old we were when we started this podcast.
Yeah, you know what's even younger?
24.
Us in 2020.
Seriously. I was 24.
25 when we started? Yeah, I was 25 and you were 24. Shoot.
I was 23 when we started this podcast.
That's true. You're still in your mid-20s, though. You got another year of mid.
Is 26 still mid?
That's in my mind, mid is 24 to 26, because you're in the mid three, and the last three are late, and the first four are early. Yeah.
That makes sense. I still feel like a kid. My boss the other day, who is just a little bit younger than me, she was like, how old are you turning? Which, like, she shouldn't be asking me that, but also, what? You know, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
But I was like, it got brought up. I was like, I'm turning 26. And she's like, oh, I thought you were much younger. And I went, like, that's just because you think I'm stupid.
I know. I think we talked about this mm-hmm. before. It depends on who says it.
Yeah,
some people,
literally.
When they think I'm younger than I am, I get so pissed. I'm like, yeah. Oh, so you think I'm dumb and immature?
Yeah.
Other people say it and I'm like, oh.
I'm like, oh my God. So bright and pushy
glow.
No.
I'm like, well, let me tell you the secret to the fountain of youth, baby. I don't know.
I'm glad I wore my sunscreen today. My God.
I'm glad I've been moisturizing.
I know. I got a new eye cream.
Well, here's the deal. And this is what we talked about. If someone younger than me thinks that I'm younger than them, I'm like, I'll kick you to the curb. Don't come at me with that energy. Like, I am your elder, show me respect. But if it's especially...
Don't come out with that energy. Oh, my God.
But especially if it's someone who's, like, 10 plus years older than me, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, thank you so
much.
You
just think I'm little. You think I'm so young.
And you want to know why?
Why?
It's because the smallest part of me, the most... naive, idealist, wide-eyed part of me is just clinging, white-knuckling onto the hope that I could still play a high schooler.
Ian, I think you can.
I mean, if Ryan Murphy's the showrunner, I definitely can. That man doesn't see age.
Hey.
He's got a senior citizen walking in and he says, you want to play a 15-year-old? Shoot, come on.
He said, uh-huh.
I think about it, especially, I don't care. First of all, TV, I don't do TV work. I would love to, but I don't. I also think that on TV, what you look like matters more, you know?
Yeah.
You do need to look younger.
Camera's closer to your face, yeah.
But on stage, there's so many good stage musicals about high school that I want to be in. And they've had full, like, 36-year-olds pretending completely to be in high school.
Completely. Like, oh my God, Mean Girls? Like, just think about Mean Girls. All of those girls were over 30.
Carrie the Musical?
Hey, Heathers. Hello.
This is something on... My coworker who was in Heathers was like 33 when he was in Heathers.
Exactly.
Hello. And I was like, I still got time. He's got a very youthful glow. That man is in his like 40s now and he still looks so young. So he's good. Just got good genetics. But what was I going to say? Oh, anytime. The reason I know my coworker's age when he was in Heathers is because anytime I hear about someone playing a high schooler on stage, I have a very toxic habit of doing the math to find out the exact age they were. So I was like, oh, how old are you now? How old are you in 2014? Done. I know how old you were. That's older than I was. There's still hope.
You're so older toxic. Oh my God.
Excuse me.
Honestly, I think you, and you've got a young energy about you. I feel the same about myself. Like, I think like, I'm like, have no question. Like, I'm going to be in Mean Girls. I'm going to be in Heathers. I'm not worried. You know what I mean?
I love that for you. I do also believe that for you.
Thanks. I'm not afraid to get older. I'm not. Like, I think I'm going to be like the hottest 30-year-old of all time. Like, I'm pumped as shit. And like, I don't know. People have been talking. I think what you told me once about like your thoughts on Friends and how like, you know, like the Friends kids like hung out their whole 20s and didn't start settling down until like their mid to late 30s, you know, like period. And that's just how it is. And then I've been watching Sex and the City recently and like that show too, like they're all in their 30s and they're still figuring out like who they are. And I'm just like, I don't know, like that, like I don't feel like a time clock on my life. I do in theater.
30s to new 20. I feel the same way.
Yeah, completely.
My life, I'm like, I would love to have things figured out, but I'm not like, I'm too old to not have things figured out. My stress is I just keep seeing roles slip past me that I'm like, well, now I'm too old. I'll never play that. Well, now I'm too old. I'll never play that.
I get that.
Thank you so much for tuning in to hear these two geriatrics talk about a show that was airing during our prime. Sometimes people will email us and they'll say, I didn't watch Glee when it was first airing because I was 4 years old. And like, I look in the mirror and I just see wrinkles and all my hair falling out. And I'm like, where am I? What's happening here?
He's like, oh God.
But so glad to have you here. Enjoy your youth.
Like, I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis and Freaky Friday. Like, I'm old. So
I'm like the Crypt Keeper. We are also fully still very young.
No, yeah, we're in our 20s. Also, if you guys think we're old, you don't know shit about old.
That's true. If you guys think we're old, you don't know shit about Old by M. Night Shyamalan. The people in that movie go to a beach and they age so fast.
You don't know shit about old. Seriously.
A woman has a calcium deficiency and her bones keep breaking and regrowing in the wrong shape. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Kids are born and they get old.
Kids that were 6 years old that morning get pregnant and have full babies by the end of the day. It's wild.
Whoa, huge spoiler for old, but fuck you guys. That movie is wild. That movie. You don't know shit about old.
If you think we're old, go watch Old by M. Night Shyamalan. They get old. That's old. That is old. You see the makeup on their faces at the end of that movie? They're old.
That's so funny. Oh my God. Well, thank you all so much for celebrating us getting old. We love you guys so much. Thank you for being here. Here is a mini kiss on your mini forehead. You guys, you gotta watch Old. Watch it with a friend. It's fun.
It's so fun.
Remember, we were like clinging to each other for dear life.
You had to tell me to be quiet because I was laughing so loud in the movie theater. You were like, this is disrespectful. That's so mean. No, you were correct. It was disrespectful to the other people who paid to see the movie.
We were like also like in a kind of full theater for Old by M. Night Shyamalan in Cedar City, Utah. You know what I mean?
Seriously.
Oh my God.
This isn't 2002 anymore. This man's past his prime. Why are so many people coming to see his movie?
Oh my god. Anyway, I think there's a new M. Night Shyamalan movie with John Groff coming out.
Oh, what?
Yeah, and Dave Bautista. You have been on a boat. I'll send you.
I have no idea what's going on in the real world, I'll be honest with you.
That's okay. Did you know that Jenna and Kevin are starting a new Glee podcast? That. Okay, good. We'll talk about that in the MASH episode.
It's very exciting. It also broke my heart a little bit because I was like, yeah, as if we are competition.
Oh, completely.
As if we are like in almost competition
as separate categories
Kevin
as Glee podcasts can be.
But I was like, well, they're here to steal our thunder.
I know. Stop. That's so funny. Gosh. Oh, my God. Well, welcome, Jenna and Kevin, to the Glee podcasting universe. We're happy to have you.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
If you want to come on our podcast, you'll never listen to it. But if you do.
Here is a mini kiss on your mini forehead. We love you all.
Bye. If you have thoughts that you want to send us, send them to recoveringgleek@gmail.com. Love all of you. Goodbye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 € pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.